Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Amy. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm good.
Glad. Any funny stories? Anything happen? You've been in the car a lot.
Oh, my goodness. I've been, you know, it's funny. Someone said, where have you been? I'm like, I've been traveling. Any place good?
No.
Well, Alabama, Tennessee. Not that it's not good, but it's a lot of driving.
Is it just you or you have somebody with you in the car?
No, it's always just me.
Wow.
And me and, you know, my friends that call. I make a lot of business calls on the road. But then it's hard when people ask you to write something down.
Yeah, then what do you do? Call back and leave a message.
Send me an email, which annoys me when people do that to me, but now I'm doing it to them. But it's all good. It's all good. I'm so ready for the weather to warm up. Oh, my gosh.
It's only getting colder today.
I know. I went down and the chicken's water was frozen.
Oh.
That's how I can tell whether it's a cold day. Yeah, if the water's frozen in the chicken coop.
How do they handle that?
You know, they're keeping warm. And dang, they are laying so many eggs.
Really?
One a day. Each hen's laying one egg a day.
They're back on schedule.
They are. Glad to have them back on schedule. And I'm excited about our show today for several reasons. You know, we've got a great restaurant, fresh to order.
One of my favorites. Yeah.
I know.
That's a go-to restaurant for me.
When they first opened in Sandy Springs, which has probably been, 3 years or so?
Uh-huh.
I remember you and I were huge fans. And
I still am, though.
Oh,
that's where we differ.
Too.
You still? I'm there probably at least twice a month.
Oh, I'm there at least twice a month, but I used to be there like twice a week.
Do they know you? They say, hi, Amy?
Yeah, and I actually thought that the guy that says, hi, Amy, was going to come today, but we have the real guy, the founder
the
and CEO. Yeah, the founder and CEO of Fresh to Order. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Founder and CEO, Pierre Panos. Welcome.
Hi.
So, yeah, when you walked in, I was expecting a much older man. You're so young to have started so many things. So walk us through your background and how you came up with Fresh to Order.
Well, the Fresh to Order concept, most of my background is in finer dining restaurants from back home and then here, Stony River and Brookwood Grill. And I'm used to operating at that higher level. And when I sold Stony River in 2000 to a public company, I decided, well, I took a year off first, and then I decided I wasn't made out to do nothing. So started thinking again about what could I do to take that finer dining taste profile and bring it to the people in under $10 and under 10 minutes. So the mission that I had is I saw a gap in the market, and I said there's got to be someone who's taking nicer quality food and putting it on people's tables at a reasonable price point and getting it there very quickly. So I started thinking, what about doing a restaurant that had incredible food service and facilities, and you could get the food onto people's tables in under 10 minutes for under $10? So I started playing around with the idea. I got my then corporate chef, who was with me at Stony River, who had since moved on to Country Club of the South, to come back, and I said, we got to develop some food. I got some ideas. So we worked with food for about a year and decided that this was the direction we were going to head in, and open up Fresh to Order. So it was a gap in the market. It's what I call a micro niche. Like Stony River was a niche between fine dining steakhouse and the average steakhouse casual dining like Longhorn and Outback. This, I believe, is a niche between the top end of fast casual. Let's call it a Panera because that's really what people understand and know today. This is a notch above that.
I love Stony River, too. That's one of my favorites.
Yes.
And that's, how long ago did you start Stony River?
I arrived in 93 in the country,
okay.
Got involved with Brookwood Grill. David Rowe had started that concept, and it was in need of some help. They needed a financial guy and a guy who understood restaurants. And I'm a chartered accountant, and I worked with Coopers & Lybrand for 5 years doing my articles, but I'd always grown up in the restaurant business, so went out with my dad because my dad operated restaurants back home. So when a broker who I'd interviewed called Irving Jacobs and said, you got to meet this guy. He's in need of a financial guy and a restaurant guy. I said, okay, let me meet him. Met David Rowe, got on well, got involved with Brookwood Grill, started Stony River probably 2-3 years after that. We developed it and grew it from that point in Atlanta and then proceeded to expand into Chicago. We had the land and we were ready to open, to start building and opening the restaurants. And I did an article for Nation's Restaurant News, and people really, really knew that Stony River was the next up-and-coming thing. And we got offers pretty much immediately from three publicly traded companies. And we said, no, we weren't interested in selling. But a year later, they just kept on coming back, and we eventually sold it in 2000.
Wow, yeah. What a great story. So. And, I mean, everybody's heard of them because they popped up all over overnight, and they're always full. I was at a Stony River probably in the last month, and there was like an hour and a half wait.
That's a good thing.
And wow. I never wait. You know me, Lee.
And, I know. You have a lot of choices.
Yeah, but the bar was so inviting, and the lighting and everything, the smell. I mean, there's something about it. It is almost an experience. You know, so fresh to order. So you're obviously people are trying to eat healthier, and the concept is brilliant. I mean, bringing I sometimes am in a hurry, but I hate fast food, and it is very quick. So where did you start with the chef when you sat down? I mean, did you start with, you know, different flavors? I mean, how do you go about starting something like that?
Yeah, the way we started was I wanted it to be focused on incredible salads that we know really well how to make from Brookwood Grill. So we wanted to start on the salads, but what I also wanted to ensure is that we had the entree selection that we had at some of our other concepts and a new entree selection as well for him to create new items. But I wanted to ensure that we actually had entrees on the menu, because salads, you can make incredible salads with fresh cooked proteins. All our proteins are fresh cooked at fresh to order, hence the name, fresh, you know, fresh to order. So when you order, for example, a salmon salad, the salmon's cooked as you ordered, put on top of a salad and then served. So we wanted salads, but we wanted fresh proteins. No one does that in fast casual. They're all pre-prepared and pre-done. I wanted an entree selection, because no one does a good entree selection in fast casual. Panera tried it with their pizzas. Crispini, I think they were called, didn't work. No one's done a good dinner business in fast casual. We do about 35 to 40% of our entire sales at dinner, which is very unusual, and that speaks to the variety and quality of our dinner menu, which no one's really been able to do in our segment.
Now, is it people have tried this healthy food angle, and the public seems to not go for that for very long. But your concept, I think, always draws a crowd because the quality is so much better.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, a lot of people, when you tag something healthy food, it's not going to fly. We have a choice. People can come in. If they want something unhealthy, they can eat it.
Right,
it's
there
on the
ribs
menu.
There. Right.
Absolutely. If you want ribs, you can have it. If you consider that unhealthy, you can have it. If you want, we even have kids' chicken tenders. You know, if you want chicken tenders, you can have that. But the majority of the menu is full-flavored. It is healthy, but it is full-flavored. So when you look at a specific menu item and you say, wow, you know, that's going to be healthy, it is. But when you eat it, you realize this tastes incredibly good as well. It's a good taste profile. And Jesse and I are very, very focused on taste profile. So to your point early on, how did we do it? We got in the kitchen and worked for probably 6 to 8 months. He would make, we'd discuss what to make. I'd tell him what I wanted. He would make it. We'd taste it. And we'd go through iteration and iteration of just tasting and tasting and tasting until we got what we felt were the perfect taste profiles. And if anything, our food is very food forward. We intensely focused on quality of food. If there's nothing else about the concept that people can take away, it's that when you get in, you can enjoy the food. We're very food forward.
And it's consistent, too, which is hard, I would think, with everything being fresh and not prepackaged. So the recipes are obviously consistent from location to location. And the soups, are the soups made fresh?
Correct. Soups are made in-house fresh daily
as
well.
Yeah, because you can tell. I mean, everything is so good. And
right.
I love the plates.
Yeah, that was – I'll tell you, that long rectangular salad plate, that was amazing. I had never seen that before.
Oh, I know. It's just such a different experience. And for our listeners that have never been, you've got to go because it is an experience. I mean, everything about it is different from what you're used to.
Right.
And the long salad plate, I like to go with a girlfriend and we'll share the salad. It's easy to share because it's on the long plate. We'll get soup. I mean, I think I've tried just about everything on your menu and I have not been disappointed with anything.
And the whole idea exactly was that everything needed to be recognizable but different. Every single, in fact, there were even more things when we started out. And we had to pull back some of the little tweakings that were, wow, this is just so cool and so different because it didn't work operationally. But, you know, the little lollipop that we put in the panini is a little nice
right.
out of touch.
And the little croissant. The
salad. Like, it's just the right size, too.
Right. Yeah. But it's one of those things you don't expect it, but you're like, wow, that's great. You know, that's just a nice touch.
It's a little unexpected things. And the plate, the salad plate was very deliberately chosen because most people, when they eat a salad, what happens? The salad's in a bowl. The toppings on top. You finish the toppings and you got lettuce underneath.
Right.
Well, on a long plate like we have for the salads, the toppings are perfectly proportioned across every single bit of greens. So you never are just left with greens at the bottom of your plate. And that was the whole idea. Everything is very deliberately thought through. There's nothing was left to chance.
Where was the first fresh to order?
First was in Midtown in the Spy Building on 7th Street, Peachtree and 7th. And then we did the Sandy Springs one. And then from there we did Johns Creek.
Right.
Then we did Chattanooga, and then we did Cumberland and then Buckhead. Was it Cumberland, Chattanooga, and Buckhead, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in that order.
And then so how's it feel in the marketplace? It's going to be a franchise?
Absolutely. We to grow at the right rate, and we don't just grow for growth's sakes, but to grow a concept the right way, you absolutely need to find the right people to help you grow it. And we're very deliberate in finding the right franchisees. They will be multi-unit operators, minimum of 5 years in the industry. The typical franchisee will have an area, for example, let's say Washington, D.C. is one of our target areas, who already has a brand in Washington. He doesn't want to move out of Washington, but he saturated the market with his brand that he's brought in, be it a franchise, could be any franchise. And then what we want him to do is bring in a fresh order concept. He already understands the real estate. He understands where the customers are.
Mm-hmm.
He has the right back office and the right operations people to be able to expand a fresh-to-order concept, and we go from there.
And you want that franchise owner to have multiple locations in that area?
At a minimum, we'd do is three. We're selling franchises at a minimum of three stores, 3 to 5, because typically that's the critical mass that you want. You don't want someone to go and open one in a market. It just doesn't work.
How do you go about making the decision as to whether you want to franchise something? I mean, did it, you just feel so good about it and wanted to share it? I mean, how's that process feel?
It's really hard. We want to initially grow it company-owned, and we started doing that way, and we're still going to have company stores. We're not stopping to develop company stores because you've got to feel the joy and the pain of franchisees. And quite frankly, from our Papa John's business, the way that we got involved in that, we got involved in that to a large extent as well to understand how franchisees react and the good and bad things that happen to franchisees so we can be better franchisors. So to your point, how do we operate with franchisees, and how do we the selection process is obviously very rigorous, and how did we decide to expand on a franchise basis? The question for me was really to get strategically where we wanted to get at the right time frame. We need to do franchise because this concept, which I call fast fire, and it's not fast casual, it's a notch above the fast casuals of the world. People will cotton onto it, and there are going to be other competitors, and there's going to be other emulators coming in the next couple of years, and we need to get to a certain market saturation reasonably quickly. And that doesn't mean 50 stores a year, but it means we got to do probably 10 to 15 stores a year.
And how many more are you planning in the Atlanta or the Georgia area?
Atlanta, probably another three locations.
Mm-hmm.
We have airport locations already that have gone in for bid at Hartsfield International.
Oh, in the airport. Wow.
Should get 2 to 3 there. We were two of the biggest concessionaires that approached us to put fresh to order in. So by 2012, we should have at least 2 to 3 locations in there. Another couple in Atlanta, Emory, is being signed right now. So we've got an Emory location right opposite the CDC. And probably another two. And that'll be it. That'll make 10 for Atlanta.
So you think that's what it'll hold?
Atlanta will hold 10. We don't want to saturate. We don't want 30, 40 stores. They cannibalize each other. We want every franchisee to be extremely successful.
And you mentioned something about Papa John's. I know we talked about that before we went live on the air. So what's your affiliation with Papa John's?
We're franchisees in 4 different states for Papa John's. When we sold Stony River in 2000, I wanted to get involved in something that we could expand on a bigger basis, on a quicker basis. And also, if you make a mistake with the Stony River, it's a $4 million mistake. If you make a mistake opening a Papa John's, it's a $300,000 mistake, big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted something we could operate and grow in multiple states and have a broad range of restaurants, less risk, high return, and that was the strategy. So we own the rights to certain areas in 4 states, and we will continue to grow that brand over the next 5 to 10 years.
And it's such a great brand. I imagine from franchise to franchise, though, what are some of the common threads that weave through a successful franchise?
Well, to me, the biggest thing is the food has got to be tops. And if you look at Papa John's, we talk about better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John's. And bottom line is, that is exactly what we feel we are. We had spoken early on about wanting to be at the top end of all the brands that we compete in. Well, Papa John's is the best institutional pizza out there, no question, compared to the other 2-3 major brands. And we would hope that fresh to order, when people look at it, say, well, this is the top end of fast casual, or like I like to call it, fast fine. Not fast casual, fast fine. So it's kind of finer food served at a fast casual pace and fast casual price points.
Are any of the regulations coming up with the restaurants having to show calories and things like that? Are you happy about that? Do you think that'll help you?
Yeah, we welcome that. We have to get to 20 stores, and we should be there within 3 years, 2 to 3 years. And at that point, we have to show nutritional information. We already have it on our website. Someone can go on, and it's a very robust system and see exactly how many calories they're consuming. So, and fat content and salt and all that kind of stuff. So we're very happy about that. Mm-hmm. And we already have it in place, and we're actually leading the pack in that we're developing a kiosk that people can go in and actually plug in, okay, I only want to eat 600 calories today. I don't want more than 20% from fat, and it's going to pop up the items that people can eat on our menu.
So that's in the restaurant, smart. It'll be there?
It's going to be in the restaurant, absolutely.
Wow. That is so smart.
And that's
the
next
that.
Evolution of where people are going to go with this.
I need to go online and check that out because it's the salad dressings that I love so much, and that's usually where the fat and all
where's
the calories
the, what's
hide.
What's the lowest calorie salad dressing at Fresh Order?
The lowest calorie is probably the we have a olive oil and lemon. It's a Evo. It's basically just olive oil, lemon, and it's obviously it's very very low. A lot of them are low in calories. Olive oil, which we do use, obviously has got calories.
Sure, right.
It's good fat, but it does have calories.
How bad's the balsamic?
It's not bad. If you go
really?
On and look, you will not be unhappy. You will not be unhappy.
Really? Oh, good.
That's my go-to.
I don't know. My stomach's already growling. Yikes. I mean, definitely a success story. When you moved here, what were some of the big differences you found in the restaurant business? I mean, I'm sure it's night and day from home for you.
Yeah, what I found was the quality of food didn't surprise me. It wasn't like, wow, these guys are doing incredibly well and we don't have a hope here. But my object was to come and learn first, and then after I'd learned how the Americans do it, I was going to try to do it better. But I first wanted to learn. I never came here thinking that I'd be able to teach anything. Some South Africans had come, and it failed miserably years before. So my intention was never to come here and pretend I knew it all. Even though I'd grown up from 7 years old working in my dad's restaurants, I certainly didn't know it all. So big differences. The food quality wasn't the big difference. The operational and execution and systems that they had, so the manuals, the back office that they had, all of that was a lot tighter than we had back home. So it was far more professionally run. Here, people get into the restaurant business as a career. A manager will get in, and it'll be a career for him. So you can train professionals up, and they stay with you. Back home, someone's in the restaurant business as a manager until he figures out what else he's going to do. It is not a career path.
That's interesting.
So it's a big difference. So that means that here, you can actually grow a concept far easier because you have talented people that this is what they want to do, and they will find the right company to stay with, and they will grow with them. And to that point, our tenure in our company, we have 1,600 people in the company now, and our tenure on the top end is very, very high. It's like 8-9 years average for our top team. In fact, it's closer to 10, and our managers are probably at the six-year mark, which is very unusual.
Is there any things that you were able to bring back to your dad's restaurants?
Yeah, he had already, my dad has been out of restaurants for probably 40 years. So when I came here 16 years ago, he was already done.
He was done.
Yeah, but he had restaurants from fast food to fine dining, and I always worked in them from young as we were studying. And even through university, I also worked in his restaurants.
What are your holidays like? I mean, people that own restaurants or that are in
who's
the food
doing
business.
The cooking?
Yeah, I mean, do y'all just kind of get together? I'd love to see what that looks like.
You know what happens when you're in the business so much and you're so immersed in it. When you do have a vacation or you do go out with family somewhere, you want to get out. You want to be in someone else's restaurant,
right.
Or you do not want to bring it back home and cook and do and make. Some people enjoy it. We as a family, we always go out.
Yeah.
So, and we do travel a lot. So, when we're traveling, we always try some of the best restaurants that are out there. Not necessarily the most expensive. My wife will find and look and just look for the smallest, little, most authentic place, whether we're in Italy or in Greece or in Spain. And that's where we'll eat. We don't go and say, wow, this is a four diamond restaurant. That's where we're going to go. It's all about authenticity. And that's what we want. Not necessarily the most expensive, just the most authentic food that we can find in the area.
And do you have kids?
Yeah. I have a 15-year-old, a 15-year-old boy, 11-year-old girl, and a 5-year-old.
And what are they picky eaters?
They are. We're talking about it last night on the dinner table. My wife was saying whatever she makes, and she made a great minestrone last night, whatever she makes, they'll always complain.
Oh,
and
gosh.
That's
do you make them? I made my kid. I have a 13-year-old. I'm like, okay, you're in charge of dinner. Go ahead. You make it now. You see what that's like.
That's a good idea.
You know, and that is kind of fun. My son, who's 14, actually really likes to cook, and it's kind of fun to do with him. I mean, I love to cook, and I love food. When you talked about the differences between here and in home, like the food, I'm just amazed at the ingredients here. And granted, you know, I have done some travel, probably not nearly to the extent of yourself, but...
You just mentioned you were in Alabama.
Right.
He didn't throw out Alabama when he was naming places that he was at.
But I mean, like in Italy, they go to the market, you know, daily. Here, I mean, there are just so many options. It's unbelievable to me. I love to food shop. I love to go to Whole Foods and the DeKalb Farmers Market and Trader Joe's. That's a good morning for me. I love to look at the food and I love to shop for fresh ingredients. But here it seems like there's so many options. Is it really as fresh as I think?
Yeah, one thing. Well, some of it is, yes. One of the things I remember when I first arrived definitely was going to Kroger and just walking down the aisles and seeing... Back home in a grocery store, you'd have maybe three cereal varieties on a stand.
Right, and here you have a whole row of them.
50 or 60. So that was the first thing. And people, you know, asked me this question, what is the thing you first realized? One was that, the incredible variety of product. And the other one was that every single woman had nice teeth. White teeth. And it sounds silly, but back home, it's not a priority. And, you know, here obviously it is.
Right. Now, when you see all of that, are you thinking... Why do they have all of that? what are the thoughts going through you? Or do you say, oh, that's typical America?
It's Look America.
It's got to be more.
Everything is bigger and better.
I don't know about better, but it's bigger.
You know, one of the reasons that we chose to emigrate to the States was our families had left different continents during different periods of crisis. My grandfather had been, you know, in South America and in Paris, and he emigrated to Greece. And then my mom and dad, when they got married, emigrated to South Africa, always leaving. And when I chose where we were going to emigrate to, I wanted to choose a country that would never have to leave again and that my children and their children would never have to leave again. And the only one that you could really figure out came close, you know, is the States. And even with all the issues and problems people say that we have, it's still by far the best country in the world. And people need to realize that. Yeah. Travel out there, see what's going on, and you'll come back and say...
It isn't so bad here.
It is not so bad here.
Right.
We're so spoiled. And I'm always amazed at the amount of waste, too.
Well, I think it's because we don't travel as a country. Yeah, we don't go to the other countries. You know, our idea of traveling is going to Alabama and Chattanooga. You know, that's right. Like, it looks the same. You know, it's not, you know, nothing dramatically different. But if you go to another country, then that's you're right. Like, this is different.
Yeah, it is. For as big as our country is, it is very much the same from place to place.
Right.
I would agree with that, but I always tell people as well who have not lived here, you can find a little bit of the world almost everywhere in the States. You can go to the mountains, you can go to the sea. If you truly travel the States well, you'll find a bit of almost every country in the world in the States.
Interesting. That's a great way to look at it. Definitely.
So what's on your horizon? Fresh to order now? It seems like you mastered that. You're moving on to another concept?
Yeah, you know, really not. I believe in being very laser focused. I feel if you truly want to be successful, we got to focus on two concepts at most at a time. We're not that smart that we can do 10 concepts. And quite frankly, the people that have done that haven't succeeded. So two concepts, Papa John's, fresh to order. And that's what we're going to do for the next 5 to 10 years. We're going to grow fresh to order. Our plan in 5 years is to have 50 to 60 locations that are open and about another 50 to 100 that are sold but not open. So there's a big difference between opening them and just selling them. So those ones that are sold may take 3, 4, 5 years to open. But our plan is pretty much within 5 years to have that as a goal. Our Papa John's business, we will double that in the next 5 years, stores. But we only open and grow stores, not for growth's sake, only to be profitable. We will not open a restaurant just to say, well, we have added another one to the count. Our mantra is very specific, profitable growth, not just growth for growth's sake. So we will double the size of the company in the next 3 to 5 years.
Now, do you think Americans just love pizza so much that they're just never going to stop eating pizza? That,
you know, if you look at the pizza segment, it's actually expanded. It stayed stagnant for a while, and then with the one of our competitors, I don't even want to say their name, they introduced a $10 pizza, and everyone matched it. And that actually took away from Subways and the McDonald's of the world. So the pizza segment has actually expanded in the last year, similar to what Subway did about 4 years ago with their $5 footlong.
Right.
That was actually a franchisee's idea. That expanded the whole sandwich segment. Well, we've expanded the pizza segment now. So will pizza go away? Never.
No,
pizza,
definitely.
Pizza will never go
and
away.
Is that a worldwide thing or is that an American thing?
It's America huge, but it is worldwide as well. Of course, if you go to Italy or any of those countries, I mean, pizza's huge.
But is it like crazy huge like it is here?
It's not quite as big, quite frankly. It's just incredible in the States what they do with the pizza market. It's just unbelievable. I heard interesting statistics. You talk about food and what restaurants generate. If restaurants were a country in the United States, they would be the 13th biggest country in the world. As
like
far as GDP.
Right.
which is pretty amazing.
That's a great
And we employ
statistic.
More than anyone in the country. So I'm not going to get into politics too much, but you know, some of the people up north in government should look at specifically what we do for the country and be a little bit more lenient sometimes with the policies that are handed down, like healthcare. So
you know what's interesting about that is, I know when I was growing up, I'm sure the same with you, going out to eat was like a biggest treat on the planet. Like,
yeah,
that was a rare
deal.
Occasion. And now it just seems integrated into the day-to-day life of most people and families.
It's their form of entertainment. That's what they do now.
Yeah, it's entertainment, but it's also just out of necessity oftentimes because life has gotten busier.
Right.
I think there are more working parents now than maybe there were.
But you're talking in a generation, though.
Yeah,
it's not
it
like,
is.
You know, 5 years. It's like 20, 30 years ago,
we
weren't going out as much. But now it seems like every meal you're going out.
Yeah. Lucky for restaurateurs.
Good for
good
you.
Thing.
Good
yeah.
plan.
It is
definitely
good,
good for you. So I got to ask, do you think Fresh to Order will be more successful than Stony River?
It will be bigger. There's no question about that. I hope the guys, and I actually, it's bad to say, but I've not been in a Stony River. It was kind of hard for me to go back once we'd sold, even though it was absolutely the right move. I haven't been in it probably 10 years since we sold.
Yeah.
So I hope they've kept the quality that we had. I remember clearly one of the things that I told Greg Burns, who's the chairman, when they bought, I said, Greg, don't touch the steak quality. Leave it exactly as it is. Don't touch where we, you know, anything about it, the meat cutters, anything. First thing he did when they bought it is they brought it in-house to a Charlie's butcher shop to cut our meat for Stony River. And that kind of was upsetting. And I hope that they've kept that quality consistent. They may have. I haven't been in. But as far as Fresh to Order is concerned, there'll definitely be more stores. And I feel pretty confident that it's going to be a bigger exit and company one day than what Stony River was, yeah.
And what's your favorite menu item at Fresh to Order?
I like the chicken tortilla soup because, number one, it's very healthy. What I do is I grab that and I put some avocado in. So if you have that, just ask them to put a little bit of avocado in. It's really good with that.
So I can say you told me.
Yeah, they'll do that. And I like it. I like that with a half salad combination. The one I like is a spinach salad with the raspberry vinaigrette and fresh seasonal fruit, which is strawberries. And right now, I believe it's pears. I'm not sure, but I think it's pears. So we change those. We have, you know, with mango or fresh, of course, ingredients, toppings, seasonal. So in summer, it'll be more mango. In winter, it could be pears or apples or something like that. So I really, that's probably my best item. Although we do have a great tuna burger that we are debuting. Mm-hmm. We're going to start in probably the next 2-3 weeks. And I tasted that the other day and is a great item. So when that comes out, that'll probably be my favorite item.
You have seared tuna. And
we
it's
have seared
just
tuna.
The right size. Have you had that yet, Lee?
No.
Oh, I loved seared tuna on a salad is one of my favorite things. I know when Houston's closed over here, I was so bummed. That was my favorite thing on the menu. But I will say Fresh to Orders is definitely right up there with my favorite salad. Definitely my favorite salad place.
I get it to go all the time.
And that's the tuna. That's a quality of tuna that basically is ground up. And we make an incredible patty. And it's served in a wheat flat. So you fold the flat open. Flat over and eat it as a burger, but it's a really good item. So we're gonna launch that through Facebook, Twitter, social media. We don't do any advertising as such, but that is a very, very good item. So try it in the next couple of weeks when it comes out.
You touched on a great point. A lot of our guests lately have been talking about social media, and you just said you don't really do much advertising, but that is advertising in and of itself. Do you have someone within your company that does strategy and gets that out?
Or is that your teenager?
No, we do, and quite frankly, we were very early on the bandwagon 3-4 years ago, and we started out, people were saying, this is a fad, it's going to go away, and we are way ahead of the pack as far as social media is concerned, just because we started so early, and when people are telling me, you know, don't waste your time on it, it's going to go away. You know, they had alluded to other IT things that were meant to be great and just had not flown. But social media is not going. It's here to stay.
Yeah.
And we're very, very forward on that, and we'll continue to be on the leading edge of that.
What about Groupons? Have you been experimenting
with
that?
We do not do Groupon. You know, a company that's got a $6 billion valuation in 2 years kind of worries me. And it is actually not good for restaurateurs.
I don't think it is at all either.
The question is, how do you get such a huge valuation when it's not good for restaurateurs? And I'll tell you who it is good for. A brand new restaurant opening who needs to get people in at all costs because they want them to try their product, that's who Groupon's good for. For any restaurant that is even semi-established, you do not make any profit. And what you find your existing company customers who would have come in any event using a Groupon, so they get discounted food and they would have paid full price.
And you're training them to expect a discount.
They wait for the next one.
Right.
We just don't do that. We prefer to email to our email database. If we're going to give an offer, we want our existing guests to get that offer as a thank you for coming in, not people who potentially would are only coming in because of the discount and they'll never come back, or our guests saying, wow, here's a Groupon, I'm going to go get a 50% discount, right. And they get that, and the restaurant ends up with almost none of it.
I know. That's the thing. That's a dirty little secret of Groupon.
Absolutely.
So, really?
So how does a concept like that at a $6 billion valuation continue when it's not successful for restaurants, and that's really what they're targeting? Yeah. So good luck to the guys who did it.
I would have taken that check. That was
absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt. I think the Living Social and some of the things that are more of an experience driven that get right. you in to the experience that you may repeat. But that's totally
I've
different.
Heard a ton of horror stories from retailers who've tried those kind of concepts. It's like you said, the retailer doesn't make any money. You've trained the person you're getting is that price shopper person that's looking for the deal, which isn't your optimal customer ultimately anyway. And now your existing people are angry if they missed it, number one. Like, how come I didn't get that? I've been coming here all the time. And then if they did get it, then it's like it kind of devalued that. What they're used to paying. So
even worse than that is if they do come and they come in droves, which Groupon does drive people in droves to your place of business, what's going to happen if you're not perfectly ready to serve them, you're not going to execute well. Mm-hmm. Right. You're going to annoy people and they won't come back. And bad word of mouth going out that way is horrible.
So worse, right.
I would say that if a new business wants to do it, that's fine, but be very ready to execute perfectly. And by definition, new businesses, when they get overwhelmed like that,
they're not ready.
They're not ready and they're not going to execute. So,
yeah.
So what do you think of Food Network?
The Food Network on TV.
Yes.
Yes, we like it.
Do you?
We have
do
it
you
in our Yeah, I do not watch it personally. We have it in our stores. It's one of the channels generally. We have one of the others. And funny thing, we normally have one of the news channels, whether it's Fox or CNN. And we've had people recently, because of the whole political thing, saying, well, why do you have Fox up? You've got to change it to CNN. And the next day, why do you have CNN? You've got to change it to Fox. So now we have one TV on CNN, one on Fox, and if we have a third one in a store, that'll be on the Food Channel.
Yeah.
We like the Food Network.
Yeah. It's so funny because it is, like in my dentist's office, they have a TV, and I asked the dentist, I'm like, why are you always playing Food Network in here? And he said, it's the only channel people can agree on.
Exactly.
You know, any news channel, everybody has to argue. Yeah, I have to ask people that question in the restaurant industry because there's so much buzz around it, and they're always looking for content, but...
Yep.
It's good to know that you're a fan. Yeah. Great interview. Great information. Mm-hmm. Great inspiration for our listeners. But before we conclude your segment, I would love to ask you, what would be some advice you have to folks that are looking to get into the franchising business? They may have a concept that they've developed, not necessarily a restaurant concept, but any advice for them?
Yeah, if you want to get into it and you do have a concept that you really like, you first have to open up at a minimum 3 locations to prove the concept, to prove that the unit economics work. If the unit economics don't work, you can sell a concept on buzz with a great sales team, but once they start opening and start closing, you can get to 20, 30 stores and then it just folds in on itself. It's not worth the time and effort. So you've got to prove the concept. As an owner, you have to own 3, 4, 5 locations yourself, even once you expand, so that, again, you feel the pain and all the joy of a franchisee, because if food cost goes up or if certain other commodity business, if that goes up, you'll feel it, and you'll be able to react and to that and help the franchisees get through it. So I would say go for it. If you look at a franchise model, generally there's a 5 times higher success rate opening a franchise concept than opening your own. If you're someone who has a great concept that you like, get it to 3 units at least, prove the model, and then start getting in really qualified people to help you grow it.
Great advice.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Excellent. And give your website one time for our folks that are listening that can't wait to go see the calorie content and find your locations.
I know.
Yeah. Website is www.fresh2order.com, and it can be with a letter, the number 2, or just T-O, either one. It all directs back there. And then the corporate name for our holding company is qsamerica.com. So my holding company is just Q for quality, S for service, america.com. And that has the 3 brands under it, plus the other stuff that we do.
Terrific.
Cool.
Gosh, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Excellent. Next up this morning, also local, we have the Junior Achievement of Georgia. We have Vice President Kyle Ross. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
So it's funny, I'm watching you as you're sitting over there. You're taking notes and... wow, that was a great interview.
Yes,
great success story. Tell us a little bit about Junior Achievement.
Junior Achievement is a nonprofit organization that's been around nearly 100 years. And our main concept is to really inspire young people to be entrepreneurs. I mean, really to foster that spirit of entrepreneurship in young people today. So it's a wonderful organization. We are currently now trying to serve over 140,000 students across the state of Georgia.
Wow.
Just teaching those basic concepts of entrepreneurship, financial literacy, and work readiness.
Now, how do you go about doing that? Is it, I have a memory as a child of Junior Achievement where you actually build things, right, to sell your own creation or as a team. But now things have kind of changed a little bit, isn't that right?
Yeah, things have changed a little bit, but, you know, we always tend to go back to our roots. But as you mentioned, Lee, yeah, things have changed. So to serve that many students in a calendar year, we actually diversified our portfolio of programs. And so we have an in-school or an in-class program where we get volunteers from all across the business community to go into our classrooms to facilitate these hands-on programs dealing with, as I said, you know, financial literacy, work readiness, you name it. We so that's how we're able to kind of you know, reach all these kids across the state through this in-class programming. And then, of course, there's the after-school piece, which you mentioned, Lee, where the kids actually would build something.
Right.
And actually, my department, the Capstone Department, actually houses this particular program. We've obviously repackaged it as well to kind of be relevant today. It's part of our JA Fellows program where kids meet for 21 weeks. They meet once a week, either on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday night, in a number of different corporate settings.
And they meet as a team or as individuals?
They actually meet as a team. So the average company will range anywhere between 10 students to about 20 students.
Uh-huh. How do you find the companies to participate?
Most of the companies are actually board companies, which helps us out a lot because mm-hmm. of the commitment. You know, when you're asking volunteers to work with young people between the ages of 14 and 18.
Right.
That's a huge ask. But, you know, obviously board companies who are familiar with our mission, mm-hmm. understand what it is that we're trying to do, you know, they are obviously very receptive to this type of opportunity.
And walk us through one of those evenings. What does that look and feel like?
Oh, great. So really, I guess I'll start at the beginning, how it really looks like. So we actually recruit students from over 90-plus high schools across the metro Atlanta area. So that's one of the unique things about the program is that when the kids come together, there's this whole team building concept,
right?
Because some of them may or may not know one another. So initially what happens is we go through some team building, and then we kind of lay out again, what are the expectations and what is the role of what it is, or, you know, they'll be doing over the next 21 weeks. They'll be coming together. They'll be starting a company. They'll elect officers. We talk about capitalization. And this year, we added a new concept to our particular program, which was our JA Fellows Shark Tank. So we wanted to give them an opportunity to see how entrepreneurs will go about finding different ways to capitalize their company. And so they had 4 weeks.
So they had to pitch it?
They actually had to pitch it, exactly.
Wow.
They actually had to pitch their concept to a panel of judges from the small to medium-sized business community. Some of them were from private equity. Mm-hmm. So it really gave them a wonderful opportunity to learn about how you go about raising capital for your particular company. And so it was fantastic to really see these kids put together their business plan and their pitch in 4 weeks' time.
Now, is this like, do they really have to raise money or is this pretend money?
No, this is real money.
Oh,
this is real money.
Really?
This is
wow.
real money.
So they take it. You give them a choice of concepts to pick, or they can pick anything in the planet.
They can pick anything within reason within the planet.
So, like, they go, you know, I want to make a perpetual motion machine, you know, and I need physicists, you know.
Well, because of the time frame, they're limited. They're limited because of the time. So we do have a list that they can choose from, but we never want to stifle the creativity of the kids.
Right.
And really, for most of the part, because of labor laws, they're limited in terms of what they can actually build. So they actually have become distributors in terms of selling.
Like maybe there's a catalog and like, hey, we can do this, but we can put our own little twist on it.
They can put their own little twist on it. So they will work with vendors all over the country. You know, we actually have a couple of our companies that work with a number of vendors in China. So it really gives them that experience.
Right.
You know,
so they have to actually contact them, right?
They got
to make the phone call.
Make their phone calls, send emails, you know.
Wow.
And so it's a wonderful opportunity for the kids.
And they probably have just a totally different outlook on this. I mean, for many people contacting China, they think, well, I have to think about the time difference. And how.
Right.
I mean, I had a conference call with someone from China recently, and you look at the time difference, and it was on Skype.
Right.
And it was free.
Right.
And I'm like thinking, Gosh, I remember back in the day you had to think of all those things, and now kids are just so much more savvy.
They really are. They're a lot smarter than we are, that's for sure. And you know, their ability to get things done is just amazing.
Now, when they have this, they have a 10-person team, and they're going about and they pick their product, and then they, you know, they figured out a game plan. Is there like an adult in there that's kind of their coach, or is this they're on their own kind of, and they, you know, at the end of the day, it could explode, you know, because they went off into Never Never Land because they don't right. know. I mean, they don't know what they don't know, where an adult can kind of
guide them,
kind of help them over some of the hurdles.
No, exactly. And so there are volunteers. Again, so we get the volunteers from our host sites,
right?
Because the kids will go to a number of our board companies, and so so there will be a volunteer team that will consist of anywhere between 5 to 8 volunteers,
right?
And they work with the students. The students also actually have to create a leadership team as well, so they will elect their peers to serve as president of the company, VP of marketing. So you think about some of the functions within a business; those students will serve in those roles. And then the volunteers will assist them. So they actually have to keep track.
Like, do they all, I want to be president. Like, they, you know, they have no idea what a president does or, you know, what they're responsible for, but they all want to be in charge.
Everybody wants to be in charge. You better believe it. You know, it's a lot of chiefs. No one wants
right,
to be
no
an
one
Indian.
Wants to be the guy that calls China at 3 a.m, right, to get
exactly.
a hold of the guy.
Exactly. And so they do have elections. And that's one of the reasons, one of the changes we made this year is that we wanted to, you know, instead of it being a popularity contest.
Right. Can the board remove an officer if they're not performing? Like in real life.
That can come up. If they're not performing and satisfactory, you know, they can vote, or they have bylaws and everything, so if they need to remove someone. But we try to stay away from that and really look at it more so as a coaching opportunity.
Right.
That's where the volunteers come into play because they are young. I mean, they're, you know, like I said, they're 16, 17, 18. You can think about how we might have been in that age.
Right.
You know, we
now,
age.
What's the objective for this from Junior Achievement standpoint? Is a win for you, like, you know, they go out and they sell a million of these? Or is it, I mean, a business person, especially if you're going to do this for a living, it's almost better to fail early to humble yourself, to learn stuff. So you don't think you have it all figured out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we've all met these 20-year-olds that think they got it all figured out because in their mind, this thing works like clockwork. But
exactly.
in reality, you know, maybe not so much.
Exactly.
So is a win for you either way, like a complete failure or a success?
Either way, exactly. And really, you know, when you think about defining failure, it's only if you quit.
Right.
Right.
And I think for our kids, we will allow them to fail, if you want to use that term. We will allow them to go
to
through
not
this
sell
process,
anything.
To
and not sell
anything,
one product.
Not sell one product.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you know, the kids might decide they want to leave at that point. But the reality is that they learn from their mistakes. They learn from the it's trial and error. But that's how they get better. And so what you see is, particularly when kids come back the next year, you know, just how much they've grown.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they decide to be in a leadership position or not, you just see how much they've grown, you know, just in terms of their business knowledge.
Oh,
right.
And that's the great thing about it, is that you see them evolve year after year.
Right.
From 14 to 18?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you have people that do it every year, once they start?
We have some kids that do it year after year. In fact, last year we had a young man who was in the program for 4 years.
Wow.
He's now at Stanford University. And his father really attributes him getting into Stanford by being a part of this particular program, because when you think about Stanford, you know, everybody's on that same level.
Right.
Academically, they do this.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that we really say with our students is that, you know, this gives you a story to tell, and that's going to really help you to stand out.
For sure.
You know, I started a business. I understand exactly what it takes. You know, for the most part. Now, we do simplify it, of course, but they understand some of those basic concepts of capitalizing your company. They also have to liquidate. That's an interesting point. They actually have to liquidate their company as well.
At the end of the year?
At the end of the year.
What if it's like going gangbusters? Like, what if it's like this huge hit that they've, you know, hit the pet rock or something?
Right. You know? That's something that we'll continue to explore. But we want them to go through that whole experience of liquidating a company. You know, if they are profitable, we want to make sure they understand the importance of paying a dividend back to their shareholders.
And who are their shareholders? Who are the investors?
The investors can consist of parents, of course, that immediate network.
Right.
You know, your parents,
friends,
your neighbors,
family, and
family.
That's where everybody gets their money from.
Teachers, you know, whoever. But we also, you know, one of the things that we really want to encourage them to do is also, you know, get beyond that network.
Huh.
You know, particularly when it comes to sales. Now, within reason, of course, because, again, we want to make sure they're being wise as they're interacting with people that they may not know. But we want them to think beyond that immediate network because, you know, for the most part, you know, mom, dad, grandma, they're going to buy it just because.
But what's their a typical initial investment? Is it like $100?
Actually, it's $5.
$5?
$5, really? Exactly. So the kids are given, they're given 100 shares of stock.
Right.
And so each valued at $5 a piece.
So they have to raise $500 as a team?
Yes, $500 as a team, you know. And so that kind of gives them, that's the initial startup, you know, right, to kind of get things going. But again, the great thing about it is because we require them to do so much market research, they can figure out exactly how much startup capital they need, whether or not it's the full 500 or whether it's, you know, 350. They understand that. We actually have them go through the whole break-even analysis to figure out exactly what their price point should be. You know, and if they do things according to plan, exactly what they can expect in terms of a return to their shareholders at the end of the
right,
at the end of the program.
And so, what's like been the record? Turning 500 into.
Well, last year, I'm not even sure exactly. I can tell you last year's group, we had two groups that actually, off an initial $5 investment, they were able to basically return $13 and $12 respectively.
Wow.
To their investors.
Hmm.
So
was Bernie Madoff one of those?
No. But again, it's you know, it's just one of those wonderful experiences, and that's one of the things too. As one of our capstone experiences for this is that the students actually have an expo, which will be taking place in March, March 26th at the Georgia World Congress Center, and they have an opportunity to showcase their business. At, you know, obviously they would have liquidated at this point, but they actually put up it's like a trade fair. You know, they will design a booth. You have an opportunity to come in and ask them questions. They have an annual report which they have to create and submit and so forth.
How neat.
So we take them through the whole process. And so it's a wonderful experience for them to actually have to walk through that.
So then what in this expo, since they've liquidated, what are they doing there?
Really, it's two parts to it. Part of it in the morning is it's a competition,
mm-hmm,
and it's modeled after the North America competition. So that's a national competition where JA companies across the U.S. and Canada will actually compete for the best JA company in North America.
So they're kind of summarizing what their experience was.
They're kind of summarizing their experience. So what they do is there's actually a four-minute presentation, which kind of talks about all the highs and lows of their particular experience. Because the thing is, although financial success is important, mm-hmm, we also want to make sure that there's learning that is taking place as well.
Sure.
You know, if there are challenges, how do they deal with those challenges? How do they overcome those challenges and so forth? So they need to talk about that. There's a team interview. Their annual report is also being judged. And then their booth, in terms of their creativity of designing their booth and things of that nature. So, and then we also have some individual competitions as well in terms of outstanding young business person, best sales pitch, where actually the day of, we actually give them a product and they have to come up with a 3-minute pitch.
Wow, just right on the fly.
Just right on the fly.
Oh, wow, that's killer.
Right on the fly.
Yeah, so. That is. Those are great skills to know.
Great skills
exactly. To learn.
Exactly.
How can folks get involved?
Well, if they're interested in getting involved, you can go to the JA of Georgia website, which is www.ja.georgia.org. And Georgia is spelled out. So.
And then, so an individual, or is that primarily business people get involved? Or
It can be anyone, really, exactly anyone. So whether you're in the business community or not, if you're just passionate about, you know, wanting to help young
right,
people, you
there's,
know,
there's
we,
a
we
place
take,
for you.
There's a place for you. Exactly. Right. Exactly. You know, as we continue to, you know, like I said, as we want to make sure that we get this information to as many young people as possible, we need all the support we can get. So.
Terrific.
Cool.
Great interview. And you're right down the street.
And we're
you're
right down the street. Exactly.
Love that. Kyle, thanks for being with us today. And maybe give that information one more time for the Junior Achievement website. And then the expo, is that something that anyone can attend?
Is that open to the public?
It is open to the public. The expo is open. Let me refer. It is open to the public from 2 o'clock to 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the trade fair.
Okay.
Exactly. But it's on March 26th. It's at the Georgia World Congress Center.
I'd love to see that. That would be so neat.
Yeah, we were talking possibly of doing a remote broadcast from there.
Oh, that would be a lot of fun.
That would be.
Maybe you can come.
Yeah, Lee, you're a thinker. That would be interesting. Very interesting. A lot of sharp young people out there.
Yes.
Creating leaders for tomorrow.
That's right.
You got to learn, man.
You got to learn.
You do. There are a lot of mistakes I wished I had learned when
exactly,
I was 14, 15, 18. Yeah.
Save a lot of time and money later on.
Exactly.
No doubt, for sure. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for being with us this week. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Have a wonderful week.